You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
That was frustrating. The Rockets, despite getting the short end of the officiating stick, despite almost nothing from Clint Capela, 4 points, 6 rebounds, minus 17 in his 27 minutes, were tied with under 6 minutes to go at Oracle Arena, knowing that in this best of seven round two series, they need to win at least one on the road to defeat Golden State 4 times and ultimately advance. With all the things that went against them, a poor night from Capela, bad officiating, we'll talk about that a lot today. The Rockets got a gritty effort from James Harden, 35 points despite making just 4 of his 16 threes, 27 from Eric Gordon. They fought back after being down 9 early in the fourth to tie it with under 6 minutes to go, and ultimately they could not finish the job, falling 104-100 in Game 1 of this second round series with the two-time defending champion Warriors. Game 2, and a very important one for the Rockets, also at Oracle Arena, is Tuesday evening. So with that as the backdrop, welcome in to a new episode here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. Today's show is sponsored by our friends over at ZipRecruiter. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/LockedOn to try the service for free. That's ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Now on today's show, this Sunday evening, April 28th, I'm going to be joined in a few minutes by Matt Moore. You know him on Twitter as HP Basketball. He's the senior NBA writer over at the Action Network. Matt's going to help me break down the themes from Game 1, whether we should be encouraged or discouraged, because I'm largely torn on that. I'll also get his thoughts on the officiating. I won't go too far into that here in my initial thoughts segment because, look, I'm based here in Houston. I'm aware of my own biases, so that's why I do want to get some more neutral perspective as to just how bad the officiating was, because it looked to me like the Warriors, Draymond Green, and Klay Thompson in particular, were consistently coming up into the landing space of James Harden and Chris Paul on their threes, including in the final 15 seconds when James Harden, with the ball down 3 after the Rockets smartly forced a steal, tried to hit a 3 to tie the game, and Draymond Green made contact with him and was in his landing space. No call. The Warriors ultimately, they didn't secure the rebound, but in the scramble, Eric Gordon stepped out of bounds. Then Chris Paul dared to be upset about it and got tossed for having the nerve to be upset with what, at least to me, appeared to be an obvious mistake, what a profession that is, and the game was over. Anyway, we'll talk more about the officiating issues with Matt because I recognize my own biases. I'll defer on that just a little bit. Here off the top, I am somewhat torn on how to feel about this game because, as I see it, there's good news and there's bad news. The good news is that the Rockets really did not play all that well. They lost by 4 points on the road, and yet when you look at this box score, they were out-rebounded by 12, grabbed just 26 on the game. That had a lot to do with Clint Capela grabbing just 6 in 27 minutes. They got an encouraging performance off the bench, 8 points in 14 minutes from Nene, who suddenly appeared playable, although they certainly need to help when he's on an island against Steph Curry. The Rockets down 2 before the crazy final sequence, and the Warriors got Curry against Nene on a switch. The Rockets didn't help, and Curry did what you would expect him to do against a 36-year-old Nene. He created separation, and one of the league's best all-time shooters made the shot that, at least at the time, appeared to be the dagger. Now, it didn't, because the Rockets got 2. They forced a turnover and then set the scene for that chaotic ending, including what I believe to be a missed call by Draymond contesting on that James Harden 3. At the end of the day, it's a weird game to look at because Houston was so close, and they didn't even shoot 30% from 3, made 14 of their 47. The Warriors as a team made better than 50% from the field. So you see a lot of the stats, the field goal shooting, the rebounds, and you look at it and you say, wow, Houston was this close on the road, and it was far from their best effort. What happens when Clint Capela plays better? What happens if Daryl Morey, Tad Brown, Tillman Fertitta, the Rockets brass sends the clips of Klay Thompson, Draymond Green landing in the landing space for the likes of James Harden and Chris Paul throughout the game, and those end up being 3-shot fouls? yeah, you can extrapolate a lot of positive things from the fact that the Rockets were this close on the road. The flip side is that you generally don't get that many chances against an elite team like Golden State. For example, last year, the three games in the Western Conference Finals, Game 4, that was the one that went down to the wire, and the Rockets won it. It was anybody's game in the fourth quarter, and between Chris Paul and Eric Gordon, they made just enough shots in the fourth quarter to get it done. The other two games, Game 3 and Game 6, now the latter, you can put a slight asterisk on it because there was no Chris Paul, but the Warriors' talent allowed them, once they hit a few shots, to run away and hide. So I'm somewhat torn on how to feel about it. Kevin Durant was great in this one with 35. Steph Curry, just 18, although he did have the dagger three at the end. Klay Thompson, 13 points on just 5 of 13 shooting. So at the end of the day, I'm not sure how to feel, and really, I don't know that any of us will until we see Game 2. It could be very possible that maybe the Warriors aren't as good as they were even a year ago. They did have a worse record in the regular season. Houston did beat them 3 or 4 times, and the Clippers beat them twice in round one. Maybe the Warriors don't have that extra gear that they did a season ago. Or who knows, maybe the Rockets defensively are good enough, even compared to a year ago when they lost game one at home with a very lethargic defensive effort. I thought Houston was much more dialed in, Clint Capella aside, in this one, and they went on to at least be competitive. So it was different than game one a year ago, even though the result, the Warriors winning, ended up being the same in both cases. In my opinion, it's hard to know how to feel about it until we see game two. If these things play out the same way, but the Rockets get a better version of Clint Capella and or they get a friendlier whistle or make a few more threes, then yeah, you can say that Houston being this close with so many variables going against them is a good sign for what this series has in the future. And the Rockets lost a game like this, so much frustration, but it wasn't even a home game. The Rockets do need to win at least one on the road, but certainly it's not as bad as losing a game like that on your home floor. The flip side is that this one was definitely winnable. The Rockets need to get at least one in this series on Golden State's home court, and they let it slip away. So which will win out? Time will tell. But that's why the key word I keep going back to on this Sunday evening, my initial thoughts, frustration. Because, yes, a lot of the issues from an X's and O's standpoint you can fix. Mike D'Antoni, Jeff Bezdelic, they'll be working on tactical adjustments. As far as the officiating, Daryl Morey, Tad Brown, Tillman Fertitta, they'll be doing their thing with the league office. That can get better. But sometimes Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, they might get hot in a given game and you can make all the right adjustments and it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, the Rockets, they need to beat Golden State 4 times. And while I think they showed you that this series is definitely close, it's definitely competitive, at the same time, they did lose a winnable one. So my initial thoughts are one of largely frustration, and as far as what it means, we'll learn a lot more once Game 2 starts on Tuesday night. Anyway, we'll continue our show momentarily by getting to Matt Moore, HP Basketball on Twitter, also senior NBA writer at the Action Network, for some national perspective on the officiating and all the other issues. But for now, I do want to pause and acknowledge our awesome sponsors over at ZipRecruiter, the folks responsible for bringing you today's show. And you know, hiring used to be hard. Multiple job sites, stacks of resumes, a confusing review process. But today, hiring can be easy, and you only have to go to one place to get it done. That's ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. And then as applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so that you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, my listeners here at Locked On Rockets can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. That's ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. That's ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. All right, now as we continue our show, this is Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on everything Houston Rockets basketball. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. Today we're joined by Matt Moore, senior NBA writer at the Action Network, and you probably know him better as HP Basketball on Twitter. Matt, welcome back. Thanks for taking the time to join us.
Hey, glad to be on with a fan base that alternately loves and hates me depending on the day.
Yeah, I think they like you this weekend because, first off, you're one of the only national guys I saw to pick the Rockets to win in this series. Rockets in 6, which are official pick. And we'll get to some of the issues in the game momentarily, officiating, Clint Capella. But as a guy who picked the Rockets going into this series, I'm curious your take because I'm torn on how to feel. From an X's and O's standpoint, a lot of the things that went wrong for the Rockets today, certainly some of the missed threes, but Capella, the officiating, their paths to where the Rockets can get a lot better, and they lost by only four. The flip side is that this was a winnable game at Oracle, and unlike last year in Game 4 when they closed it out, this year they didn't, and you never know when the Warriors have that extra gear to, even when you play your best, to still beat you because they're the Warriors. So as a guy that picked the Rockets in this series, are you more encouraged or discouraged that this close Game 1 went against them?
I think we're not going to know until Game 4. If the Warriors go up, well, I guess Game 3, if the Warriors would win the next two, we would know pretty conclusively.
Yeah.
But let's assume the goal, that Houston gets one of the next two games. And if Houston gets one of the next two games, it's 2-1, and then you have to see whether they go down 3-1. Now, obviously, the Warriors have a history with 3-1, but I just don't believe that the numbers are never going to work out in your favor if you're down 3-1. It's just too tough, and I think the Rockets would be just so frustrated. I'm concerned about them in Game 2, because I just don't know if they're going to be able to emotionally get back up for it. Like, this is a really frustrating, demoralizing game. They didn't play well. Houston didn't play well, but they definitely had a chance. I think maybe the encouraging part is this one. If you look at the last now eight playoff games that have been played between these two teams, and you take out the two that Chris Paul didn't play, you have a Warriors blowout in Game 1. You have a Warriors blowout in Game 3, and then you have a bunch of these games, and you have one close win. In all of these games, you have one close win for the Warriors without Chris Paul. So, I think that's encouraging. I don't know how Game 2 is going to go. My initial thoughts lean towards Houston because, good God, they played well enough to win that game despite playing badly. But that's also, I've did a whole series preview. That's how the series is going to go, is that both teams are going to drag each other into the mud and exchange haymakers, and it's going to be about who makes a few more plays. Houston's got to get one game where they hit. They got to get one game where they hit their shots. They've missed so many good looks versus this team, and they're going to have to find one game where they just, absolutely overwhelm them and are like, we just are going to hit everything tonight. We're the Houston Rockets. We have a top 10 offense all time. We're going to hit everything tonight. They got to get one of those damn games if they're going to be able to get one. The formula for them getting the four games that they need in this series is going to have to include one. I'm not off of Rockets in six yet. If the Warriors win Game 2, that will probably shift me a little bit to at least put it to Rockets in 7, with it being way more of a coin flip. But I'm not off yet, because this really was just a wild, crazy outlier game, and that can swing a series, but it's also something, if you have the right mindset, you can recover from.
Were you surprised by Iman Shumpert and Nene off the bench? Shumpert at 21 minutes, that was the most of any Rockets reserve after he basically didn't have any real run with the rotation against Utah. Nene played 14 minutes, and he basically did not play at all in last year's Western Conference Finals. Were you surprised by those decisions? And I know some of it played into the Austin Rivers missing Game 1 with an illness, but we heard from D'Antonio before the game that Shumpert was going to play regardless of what happened with Rivers. So just your thoughts on the bench play and the decisions that D'Antoni made as far as the four non-starters.
I'm not surprised. I had the thought late that even though Shumpert didn't play in the last round, that he might just be like, I like the matchup a lot better in this round. D'Antoni is smart enough to know, look, last round we didn't have a wing creator that was a small forward that I needed to be able to guard it. I needed. There's nobody on Utah with that kind of propensity. And this one, I think it's way more obvious that they need more defenders with length to be able to contest and give them something. So I'm not surprised there. I'm not surprised about Nene, because Capella obviously is just like a wreck. Just like an absolute wreck right now, and continues to be, and they just got to get him some vitamin C and get him back to health. Leaving him in on that late sequence, that was the biggest mistake the NBA made today. D'Antoni just, that was a complete boned. I get it. They got killed on the glass, and he was worried about that and was like, I got to stop the bleeding. And if they'd given up another offensive rebound, that may have been the game. So I get that it's tough. You can't, in a situation in which they're only going to hunt a matchup late, you cannot, if you're going to do that, you absolutely 100% can't have it be Steph Curry's able to get the switch on him. You got to be like, all right, look, we're putting in Nene. We're not switching on Curry. We're going to blitz him. And if we get KD rolling, Tucker, you're going to have to make a play at the rim. We'll try and get a corner three and hope they miss. That's what you do. You do not let them get that switch of Curry on a Nene, of Nene on a Curry, rather. You don't let them get that. So, that was a big mistake there. I thought Nene gave him good minutes. We'll see if he plays him in Game 2. That might regulate if Capella gets better. If not, I think by Game 3 it's not. He might go with Faried to give him a different look. There's no telling what I think D'Antoni's going to do with guys – seven through nine in terms of which one's going to get the nods there. But I do think that it's not surprising that he switched things up. I think it is a little bit surprising that he made such a crucial mistake late.
I wish I was as optimistic as you on Capella that it's medical related, and it could be. What frustrates me more about Clint is that we saw this in last year's Western Conference Finals as well, in that Capella in the home games against Golden State was playable. In the games at Oracle, he really struggled with. I don't know what it is about playing in that gym. Maybe it has to do with the whistle. I don't know. Capella on the road has not seemed like the same guy in these matchups, at least in the playoffs. Now, he had a 29-21 game in the regular season, but there's still a lot to prove there going into game two. The two guys that really impressed me today, and I just want to get your thoughts, obviously James Harden, 35, Gordon, 27. The bad news, look, they shot 8 of 29, but as you said, they're just going to have to make some of those shots, and ultimately they will. What impressed me, and of course there's a big difference against Golden State than against Utah, there's no Rudy Gobert, and the fact is that even though they could barely buy a three, those guys still got to the rim as much as they did and were able to see the ball go through the net. And even though Houston down 9 in the fourth, they had every opportunity to fade and say not our night. They kept pushing. So by and large, obviously they need to make more threes, but I thought this was a really encouraging game from the standpoint of Harden and Gordon off the bounce, causing Golden State a lot of problems. Is that fair?
It is. I think Gordon's probably going to – everybody's like, I don't know if you're going to get this from Gordon again. I think you are. Gordon did his unders and all his props last year, but he also gave them some really good games. Harden had 9 buckets tonight, and I think 7 of them were when the game was starting to get out of hand. And then he would make a 3, and it would be like, here come the Rockets again. Like, the Warriors would push it to 9. There's a 3, it's back to 6. The Warriors push it to 8. Harden 3, they push it back to 5. Like, so many of those were huge momentum swingers. But at the same time, he's still struggling with that floater. I don't think he hit one all night. Going to the mid-range was a good adjustment, even if it's painful for the Rockets in terms of how they play the game. And for Daryl, I'm sure, and specifically, it's painful. But
right.
That's the adjustment you're going to have to make. If they're going to work so hard to take away your step back, you're going to have to get a little inventive. And I think going to that mid-range is probably not a bad way to go. The other thing is, he's going to have to – the biggest thing with Harden, I don't think this was a good Harden game. Like, him putting up 35 points on 28 shots on the surface looks good because he got to the rim, and he got 14 free throws. And that's good. That's good. But my point is, like, there were a lot of sequences where he was driving on layups and he brought the ball up in that way that he does where he's just like, oh, I'm just going to like gently blurt, like glide it up. You have to, he's got another one in him where he spits it. Like, it's just like an undercut where it's just like, and it's like a fireball from Super Mario Brothers. He's got a pass like that too. But he's got a shot like that off the glass on the left. He's going to have to go to that more because Iguodala got him twice on that. And you can't have jump balls and stuff like that when you're on that, when you have a chance, when you actually get to the rim, when they're not packing it down on you, and you have a chance to get to the rim, you got to convert, and you can't have situations where you miss off the front rim, you take that. All right, you're James Harden. You're gonna make those most of the time. You can't have where you get blocked or you get a jump ball. You just can't have it.
We're continuing our show here with Matt Moore, senior NBA writer with the Action Network. You can follow him on Twitter and probably know him on there as @HPBasketball. Matt, we spent our last segment discussing largely the depth issues, the curious rotations that the Rockets went with, Iman Shumpert, Nene off the bench. We also talked about the woes of Clint Capella, which played into Nene getting as much run as he did, including the ill-fated possession in the final minute when Curry got the three. We looked at James Harden, Eric Gordon, mixed bag, 62 points between them, but definitely some points, especially the open shots, but also the drives that Harden in particular left out there. Matt, I want to transition to everybody's favorite subject, which is the officiating. I haven't discussed it much because, look, I admit my bias. I'm a Houston guy. Just curious your thoughts as someone nationally. How much outrage should there be? Because in my eyes, yes, there were mistakes that went both ways, but there was consistently an issue with Klay Thompson and then the final possession of the game, Draymond Green, ending up in the shooter's landing space for the Rockets, usually James Harden or Chris Paul. CP3 scored 17 points, ultimately got ejected, and it seemed to be all game long an issue that the crew led by Courtney Kirkland was not going to correct. I know you usually get on me for complaining about officiating, and many times you're probably right. In this case, do Rockets fans have a right to be upset?
I'm so mad at the officiating tonight, and the reason is because all year I tell you, look, man, some calls aren't going to go your way. You don't have to complain about every single one. You constantly are on the officials every single game on Twitter about how bad they are. And then they do this, which is honestly one of the worst officiating games I've ever seen covering the NBA. Like, this was 2002 Kings level. It was really bad. Like, everyone, there was a comment made tonight by somebody that, like, oh, well, maybe instead of complaining about the officiating, the Rockets should shoot better than 14 of 47 from three. Well, maybe if they could land on their jump shots, they'd hit more than 14 of 47. Like, those calls specifically are dangerous. The league specifically stepped in and said, this is an area of emphasis. You cannot undercut shooters. Mm-hmm. This hurts guys, and we can't lose key players in playoff series. This is a dirty play. And the refs allowed it all night long, constantly. There were calls that went on Curry, but Curry, we know, reaches. Like, Curry's a reacher, and all of those plays are ones that the Golden State media guys are like, oh, Curry's reaching again. Like, he knows he can't do that. Like, Steve Kerr was like, he's reaching. You can't reach. Like, they're clear fouls. KD drew a few that were legitimately good calls. He had two that I thought were, like, soft bumps. Like, that was the other thing is, like, shooters are getting mangled on one end and can't land. And on the other end, they're calling drives, non-shooting foul drives on soft bumps going to the rim. Like, what is happening here? One of the worst officiated games. It's going to be the conversation for the next 2 days. I don't know whether Houston's going to get makeup calls because it's so obvious. It would be too obvious to give them makeup calls. That's how obvious it was.
The flip side to it. There's such a specific area in this case. Usually, even though I complain on Twitter, I understand your perspective, and you're usually right, that there's not much that, even if we think we're right, that we can do about officiating. In this case, it reminds me a little bit of being on the other side of, you know, the Mark Cuban, Yao Ming beef from the 2005 playoffs about the moving screens, where sometimes if the issue is so specific that many times you can get changes, this might be the exception to the rule. Now, you're right in that perhaps this one is too obvious, because if they overcorrect it, then all of a sudden Golden State has a gripe. But is there at least a path, as I see it, because this is such a specific rule that the last 2 years they have begun really ramping up their enforcement? To me, it's much easier, at least in theory, to fix this as the series moves on, as opposed to, say, just a generic, you're not getting the whistles on one end that you are on the other. Is at least there a path to where this gets improved? Maybe not completely fixed, but at least improved.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a path. Like, I think it's likely that the next officiating crew will be told, like, hey, so they're not allowed to just completely take away the landing space. You're going to have to call more of those. Like, D'Antoni said post-game that he had the official say, like, yeah, we missed four, which is shocking because then they turn around and they missed another three in the second half. Like, yeah. What are you doing? But I do think there's probably a path for it to get better. I think the whistle probably goes – honestly, the best kind of concept is it probably goes – it swings hardest in Game 3 in Houston. Like, that's probably a game where Harden shoots, like, 20-plus free throws. And just, like, everybody's getting to the line, and the Warriors are the ones frustrated. Like, that's more likely to be the case, I think, than maybe game two. I do think there will be, like, there's cause for outrage today. I think when the national media and so many of us were like, you can't do this, man. Like, this is not okay. Like, guys that don't have any stake in the series were like, this just can't happen. That, I think, probably really will actually turn things around. Like, the league doesn't want that perception.
Last two guys I want to ask you about. In picking Rockets in six, you specified Daniel House, and I was a little floored by this, as a guy that could give you what you got from Ariza a year ago. And throughout the season, we've certainly seen glimpses of it. Today, 3 points, 21 minutes, 1 of 4. I thought it was a game in which the moment seemed at times a bit big for him. And then the other, Chris Paul, 17 points, 4 assists, 3 steals, 5 of 9 shooting. A bit unorthodox, and they didn't really look for his shot. And I'm just curious your take on CP3. Is it an issue of him needing to be more aggressive, or is he not as spry as he was a year ago and able to create separation against these guys?
I think a lot of it was they were getting better opportunities by using Paul as the initiator. And then a lot of what happened was, like, Paul would create a switch and then get it to Gordon, and then Gordon would take his man, but it wasn't an assist. Like, that was some of the action that occurred. There was a few sequences where Capella just absolutely, like, blew the situation, just good passes that he just completely boned. Mm-hmm. you know, I think Paul's not as spry. Like, he's not lightning quick anymore. He's crafty. He can get a first step on certain defenders. Hits a big shots. Like, he was efficient tonight, 3 of 6. Like, those three, he hit 3 of the 14 3-pointers, and those are huge. Like, you know, he still had 17. I thought he was really good. I think with House, he and Tucker combined to shoot 1 of 7 from 3-point range, and they were all great looks. Those corner threes, you got to hit. Like, you have to hit those shots. Like, if you bend the Warriors to where they're like, I got to help, and you get them down and you get that pass to the corner and you've got a spot up look, you got to knock it down. Like, period, point and blank. I'm sorry, your entire, everything about your chance in the series to knock off the 2-time defending champs, 3 of the last 4, arguably the greatest team of all time, your best chance to beat them is you got to knock down those shots. You hit 2 more of those and you walk out of Oracle with a winning game 1. Like, that's the reality, is like, those shots have got to go down, and there's nothing they can do. All they can do is shoot them, but it's absolutely just crucial that those shots get, they got to get those shots to fall. You can't miss your corner threes when you create them in the series.
One more question for you. Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, combined 5 of 15 from 3. That's a good night for a lot of players. For those two, it's obviously well below their average. Just curious, your thoughts moving forward, how much of it was just a bad night from Steph Curry and Klay Thompson? How much of it was really good defense by the Rockets and forcing tough shots?
Well, and Curry hit the biggest shot of the game. So, you know, I think that's about typical for Curry. Like, I think honestly it was good defense. Like, they just defended him well. They didn't get open looks all over the place. They didn't create good. Like, they have one malfunction where they had Nene on the floor and they switched, and Curry hit the biggest shot of the game. You get a miss on that one, and again, the entire game is, it probably plays out differently. So it's you can't have those little mistakes versus them. Your margin for error is very low. But I don't necessarily look at that as like, oh, they're definitely going to shoot better. You could say that, but like, they didn't shoot well last series. They just didn't, in terms of not versus the Clippers, but versus the Rockets last year. The Rockets defense does mess with them. The Rockets defense is geared for what happened tonight, which is they want to get, you know, Kevin Durant 35 points on – they don't want him to get 35 points on 25 shots, but they want him to get 25 shots. They want him to get more shots than Curry and Klay combined. They'll live if KD's the only one going off, which is smart. That's the way to do it. They almost won the game because of that. If KD has an off night, they're going to win. Like, the Rockets are going to win every game where Kevin Durant doesn't shoot, doesn't score as efficiently as he did. I mean, he got 15 free throws tonight, too. So I just think that if you look at it, they play good defense. Can Curry get loose? Sure, but it's going to take the Rockets falling apart. One thing I think is really notable here, look, this is, I know Rockets fans love him. This ain't the series for Gerald Green. It wasn't last year. They got some good minutes from him, and they were lucky in those minutes. He hit 1 of 1 tonight. A minus 16 and 7-11 stands out in a game where nobody except Capella was worse. Like, that was, you can't have a 7-minute stretch where you're outscored by 16 points. Like, that just, you can't be on the floor for 7 minutes and get blown out by 16. That's a problem. So this is not the series for Gerald Green. He's got to go. I'd like to see a little bit more probably Fareed mixing it up with Nene. If you're going to do that, like, get both guys a little bit of rest so they're a little bit more fresher. Hopefully Capella feels better, and then that'll give you a much better chance in game 2.
And then you get Austin Rivers back, too.
Right.
Yep. Folks, he's Matt Moore. You can follow him on Twitter at HPBasketball or go to the Action Network and read his articles. And, Matt, you're still sticking with Rockets in 6 at this point, right?
Yep, still sticking in Rockets in 6. We'll see how game 2 goes.
Good stuff. Appreciate it. Matt, thanks so much for the time. Look forward to having you back on again sometime.
Anytime, guys.
Good stuff there with Matt Moore. Thought it was a solid show, fairly optimistic, even considering the frustration of the loss. And remember, to get this show each and every day throughout this series and hopefully beyond, if the Rockets advance, you can subscribe to Locked On Rockets on the new Himalaya podcast app. In this ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlist and new features each and every day. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to Locked On Rockets. So with Matt's chat complete, this is where we'll wrap it on this Sunday, April 28th. As always, I appreciate you so much for tuning in. And if you want more content before our next episode, we'll probably do something looking forward to game 2 on Monday evening. Then the best place to get stuff in the interim is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. The show is on there at Locked On Rockets. And you can also follow Matt Moore on there at HP Basketball. Beyond Twitter, we've also got a Facebook account at facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, a website, LockedOnRockets.com, an email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. All of those are ways you can access prior content. You can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, or inquire about how to become a potential sponsor of the program moving forward, just as our friends at ZipRecruiter were today. Remember, go to ZipRecruiter.com/LockedOn, and you can try the service for free. That's ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. So with that, I'll break things. As always, thanks so much for listening. And remember that you can, beyond listening, subscribe to this show on the new Himalaya podcast app, as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And when you get in your car, you can tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Rockets and get our most recent episode that way as well. Once again, the unhappy final from Oracle Arena on this Sunday, April 28th. Warriors win game one, 104-100. Game two is Tuesday evening, a late start, 9:30 p.m. Houston time, also at Oracle Arena. Rockets need to even the series, in my opinion, to have a good shot at winning it. If you go down 0-2, then you need to win at least four of the next five. Well, not at least, but certainly you're looking at having to win four out of five. And against the two-time defending champions, that's a tall order. Lots of X's and O's reasons to think that the Rockets, especially with a friendlier whistle and a better Clint Capella, can have a better result on Tuesday night, but now it's on them to go out on the floor and prove that today was an outlier. Anyway, whatever happens, we'll have everything broken down right here at Locked On Rockets, because that's what we do as the only daily podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. For now, have a good night, and please come back soon for more episodes.